lesser evil, but thine is the kingdom, power, and power, and glory forever.
Amen. Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, liberty, and justice for all.
You've stirred him up again, Mike.
I guess so, yeah. Good morning. We'll call the County Council meeting of March 27th, 2012 to order. First thing on the agenda, Mr. Lawson, will be approval of the agenda.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President, and good morning. Today we can strike the approval of the minutes. And from executive session, we can strike job applicants' qualifications and personnel.
Entertain a motion to approve the agenda as amended. Motion, Mr. Wilson. Second, Mr. Phillips. Any questions? Take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Reading of correspondence. Mr. Moore?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President. We do have a letter from Senator Bunting, and he asked that we share this today. And as some years ago, I went in front of Sussex County Council to create a county police force to get their attention regarding the responsibility in protecting our citizens. Within weeks, we were in Dover negotiating subsidizing our state police. This was a wise decision on the county's part. It would be difficult creating a county force as our county has more road miles than both of the other two counties combined. Presently, Newcastle County has 357 county police officers. To have 357 officers, we must include salaries, benefits, pensions, buildings, cars, and electronics. If Sussex County goes this route, either with an elected sheriff's department or a county police force, it would be hard for me to calculate the tax increase that would be needed. However, I do feel we're about a generation away with the population growth that the public will demand either a large sheriff department with arrest powers or a large county police force. The county is in a dilemma now that two attorney generals have given opinions that the sheriff's office does not have arrest powers. The county stands to be liable if the department makes an arrest. Delaware's legal system ranked one of the best in the nation as our judges are not elected and not subject to what is popular, but what is right under our laws. There is no guarantee if any popular sheriff is elected that they will necessarily always obey the law, but instead use their powers due to a popularity contest to ensure their stay in office. I respect the sheriff and his officers, but at what point, if told not to make arrests and yet they do so, do he and his officers become personally liable for their actions and at the consequence of we, the taxpayers? Thank you. Best regards. George Bunting, State Senator, 20th District. I have no other correspondence, Mr. President.
Correspondent, members of council. Mr. Lawson.
Thank you. Today we have a representative from the Sussex County League of Women Voters. They are going to have their Sunshine Day presentation, and I have their report to County Council that I'm passing out.
Thank you. Okay,
good morning, everyone.
Morning.
Thank you for having us. Sunshine Day was actually a couple weeks ago. It's celebrated on James Madison's birthday because he's the father of the Constitution. And it's a week-long celebration about openness in government. And from my report, as part of the League of Women Voters' support for openness in government, its Observer Corps monitors governmental bodies for issues of importance to the League and to the county. The Observer Corps of the League of Women Voters of Sussex County was organized in January 2009. We've now completed our third year of activity, and observers attend County Council, Planning and Zoning Commission, and Board of Adjustments meetings. I will add that beginning this year, we're also having representatives at school board meetings. The reports from the observers are compiled into monthly reports and submitted to the Board of the League of Women Voters of Sussex County. Between February 2011 and January 2012, League of Women Voters observers attended 83% of county council meetings. 26% of the meetings of the Planning and Zoning Commission and 23% of the meetings of the Board of Adjustments. And this report that I'm presenting today is a compilation of the major reported issues and concerns from the past year as viewed by the observers and that relate to positions of the League of Women Voters. The highlights are, the first one is granting of time extensions to developers whose projects were expiring. The League of Women Voters opposed making such a decision without adequate information as to the number and type of projects involved. This led to a Freedom of Information request for a listing of these projects. The difficulty in retrieving this information revealed the need for a more efficient system of record keeping. It also prompted changes by the county in responding to FOIA requests. The administrative decision to prioritize the implementation of computerization of planning and zoning records was another positive outcome, although it is not clear what the status of this implementation is at this point. And this issue relates to League of Women Voters of the United States' position to protect the citizens' right to know and facilitate citizen participation in government decision-making. The second highlight is police training for sheriff's deputies. The League of Women Voters of Delaware holds the position that row offices should be removed from the election process and their functions moved to the appropriate state or local administrative agency. Third is redistricting. The League of Women Voters of Sussex County held workshops throughout the county obtaining community input into the development of a map that met the requirements for establishing new councilmanic districts and presented this to the County Council. The League of Women Voters submitted testimony regarding the Sussex County redistricting plan. Although the League has concerns about how the criteria for the county's redistricting map were developed, we recognize the process to be an improvement in terms of openness and citizen involvement from previous years. And these are related to the League of Women Voters of Delaware position reapportionment and redistricting, support for an open, unbiased process for reapportionment and redistricting with opportunities for public participation. And the League of Women Voters of the United States position of independent commissions for reapportionment and redistricting. Fourth is public facilities ordinance. The League of Women Voters supports such an ordinance, which would promote growth while ensuring that adequate infrastructure is in place. There was an initial discussion of this topic in 2010, at which in September there was promise of a workshop on this subject. In September, an ordinance was introduced but withdrawn until a workshop could be held. To date, more than 4 months later, the workshop has not been scheduled. The League of Women Voters of Delaware support regulation of growth and optimum use of land through comprehensive planning policy. Number five is wetland buffers. The courts have decided that Sussex County does not have to comply with the recommendations of the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control regarding the width of buffers to protect wetlands. The League, however, continues to support the DENREC regulations to protect the environment and wildlife and communities from flooding. The League of Delaware and its position about critical land areas has support for preservation and or protection of certain critical areas, ecologically fragile estuaries and coastal areas, farmland, aquifers, floodplain, and natural areas. While the League of the United States has a position environmental protection and pollution control, preserve the physical, chemical, and biological integrity of the ecosystem with maximum protection of public health and environment. In addition, among the recommendations listed in last year's report are these that continue to be issues. Number one, hire a certified county planner with a salary, job scope, and authority appropriate for a professional. This position differs from that of director of planning and zoning. This has not been done, and the position has been vacant for more than 2 years. Number two, provide agenda information so the public can understand and follow discussions. Information that is distributed to the press should also be available to other attendees. Projected images should be used when appropriate so the public can visualize the site plans, etc. There has been some improvement in making agendas available at county council meetings, and only occasionally supplemental material is distributed. We recommend that such material be posted on the website along with the agenda. Agendas are not reliably available at planning and zoning and board of adjustment meetings, and land use agendas should include the specific address, clearly identifying location. Number three, officials should make sure that they can be heard by the audience in the chamber and online. This continues to be an issue. Officials should also refrain from conducting side conversations. Lastly, we have some additional observations regarding where the league does not have specific positions. First, we've been favorably impressed by the fiscal management of the county. Secondly, county employees are polite and helpful. Third, emergency management services are state-of-the-art, both in equipment and care for health emergencies and disasters. We saw that in August. County sewer expansion appears to be efficient and an asset to the community. And citizens at public meetings are treated respectfully. In conclusion, the League of Women Voters Observer Corps will continue its activities this year as we share with you the goal of ensuring good government for the citizens of Sussex County. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Any questions?
Any questions of council?
Could you give us a grade, A, B, C?
I'd say I have to think about that.
Get back to it.
Thank you very much for your time. Mr. Lawson.
Yes, thank you. Item number one is letters of credit for both Summercrest and Woods at Walls Creek. I believe Mr. Izzo is here to discuss these matters. Thanks, Mike.
Good morning.
Morning.
As Todd mentioned, I have two projects to discuss. The first is known as Summercrest. Summercrest is a 98-lot subdivision that's located near the intersection of Route 24 and County Road 275. We have a number of outstanding work items to be completed by the developer. I should mention a notice to proceed was issued in 2005. And really the last appreciable work, the base layer of hot mix, was put down in 2006. There are outstanding items, as you can imagine. Public Works has indicated that the final course of hot mix needs to be put down, but also the existing base course is degraded and needs to be patched. New sidewalk installation. There's also repairs to existing sidewalk. Also repair to existing curb. It's a curb and gutter system. And then there's some curb ramps that need to be installed. They value that work at $179,000. For the Sussex Conservation District, there's no as-built information on the existing stormwater pond. There's a stockpile of soil that needs to be removed. There's areas that require further stabilization. Cleaning of basically all the stormwater system needs to be accomplished. And Jessica Watson of the Conservation District estimated that work at $93,000. For planning and zoning, the gazebo has not been installed. Benches and tables are not existing. The majority of the sidewalk has been installed where homes are constructed, but where there are empty lots, that sidewalk has not been completed. The majority of the landscaping has not been completed per the landscaping and recreational area plan, and a certification from the landscape installer is needed. Just to kind of give you some information on the letter of credit, in this case there's one joint letter of credit for all three activities. Frequently we have separate letters of credit. In this case we have one. It's valued at $312,500. It expires September 28th of 2012. And just to kind of give you some background, The residents received a letter from the developer in September of last year, and the developer is Steven Anderson, also known as Munson Street LLC. Mr. Anderson stated that Anderson Homes will be suspending operations effective immediately. We met with the resident shortly thereafter, and in December of 2011, just to go through a formal process, I sent a letter to Mr. Anderson just providing him a list of outstanding work items and requested a schedule of completion. That's kind of a step that we learned when we went through the reserves litigation here recently, that that's a step we have to go through. Mm-hmm. Okay. We gave Mr. Anderson a date, a milestone date of January 15, 2012 to provide that information. On January 13th, I received a letter from Mr. Anderson requesting a 30-day extension. That 30 days went by, and I did not receive any response. So again, that would have been February 15th, the new deadline for responding. On February 20th, I sent Mr. Anderson another letter just indicating that we did not receive any formal response from him, and that was our intention to come to County Council and call on the bonds and letters, call on the letter of credit. We were put on the agenda for this date, and last week, an attorney representing Mr. Anderson contacted David Rutt and stated that they do have an intention to complete the work within the development. They're going to get organized and would like to proceed. So here we are, we're standing here today. We met with the residents yesterday based upon this late contact, and what we are suggesting is that the County Council pass a motion today which would give us the authority to call in the letter of credit if the developer does not move forward. In other words, we would meet jointly, the county, the residents, the developer, give him the opportunity to put together a plan of action with set milestone dates. And if that developer either does not meet those set milestone dates, or by August 28th of this year, because the letter of credit expires September 28th, if either one of those two things doesn't happen, either he doesn't meet the milestones or he's not complete by August 28th, based upon my authority and a joint recommendation with David Rutt, we will move forward to call in the letter of credit. Mm-hmm.
August 28th, that's a lot of, giving them a lot of time, and I thought maybe August 1st might be a better cutoff date.
I have no objection. I need about 30 days mm-hmm. prior to the expiration of the letter of credit for me to get my work done. Yeah. However, if you feel like an earlier date is required, I have no objection.
It's so important to these people that, I hesitate to give them, they haven't shown good faith, and hesitate to give them a whole lot of leeway, but we want them to get the work done. So I'll take your advice on that. But we want to make sure that it either gets done or that the county gets it done.
I should mention that we do have a number of residents in the audience, mm-hmm. As well as I believe Mr. Willard is here representing the developer. So you have both mm-hmm. sides of the table represented here today.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So if we act on your motion,
right,
you have the ability to pull the trigger basically
on this
development.
Oh yeah.
And between you and Mr. Rutt, could we add Todd into the mix
sure.
too, to make sure we have three? So
sure.
If you have to vote on something, we have an odd number. Something like that. Anyways, is that any sure, problem?
Yeah.
I think that would be good, and I think that sounds like the way to put the pressure on Mr. Willard's client.
Mm-hmm. Are the people going to be allowed to say anything about this?
It's not a public hearing.
No. Public
mm-hmm.
hearing.
No. Not normally.
And I know Mr. Willard would like to say something, but attorneys always like to talk, and they get paid to talk.
My constituents are here, too.
No. If we let one, we let them all.
Mr. Moore.
If we let one, mm-hmm. I believe that we need to let both sides speak.
All right.
Speak.
Okay. All right. Well, I think we can figure
Mr.
it
Rizzo,
out.
Mr. Rizzo, should we hear from anybody today?
I believe I have covered the situation
to the
satisfaction of everyone
so
concerned.
And you met with the property owners?
Mm-hmm. I've met with the property owners on a number of occasions.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you'll have to really follow through with all this. It's a lot of work on our part, but sure like to see it worked out. It sounds fine to me.
David Rutt's here as well. Sorry, David.
I just have one thing. I did review this question with the property owners mm-hmm. who are here, and they are in agreement with the proposal of Mr.
Mm-hmm.
Izzo.
Mm-hmm.
And we should proceed.
Anything else from council?
Yeah, and the only thing is, again, I get a call from one of my constituents who keeps saying that make sure that the names we're using are absolutely correct. And maybe there's some confusion about Munson Street Homes LLC as opposed to Anderson. I'm sure that we have it right, but it's so important to them. Please just double check that for the names of the parties involved.
Right. We have Munson Street LLC mm-hmm. as the developer of record.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
However, we deal with Mr. Anderson of Anderson Fine. Homes as far as the day-to-day activities of the construction once it was initiated in 2005, 2006.
Yes.
Okay.
Richard, do I have a motion?
Yes, I do.
Please.
Be it moved that the Sussex County Council finds that the Sussex County Council I've changed my wording here to accommodate the county administrator. Be it moved that the Sussex County Council finds that should the joint recommendation of the assistant county attorney, the county administrator, and the county engineer find that Munson Street LLC, Inc. has either failed to make satisfactory progress of construction based upon an approved construction schedule to complete the project known as Summercrest, or all construction is not complete by August 1, 2012, its president is authorized to take action to draw funds from the letter of credit number SB95002600001 held by M&T Bank in order to complete the project improvements or procure others to complete said improvements.
Entertain a motion.
I'll make the motion, yes.
Second. Mrs. Deaver, second. Yes. Mr. Cole, any questions of council?
I have a question. Is that any of that negotiable, or is that cut and dried, those dates?
Well, if you pass the motion, then I believe that I would
cut and dried. That's what I want to make sure of. Okay.
Right. Any more questions of council? Hearing none, we'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes, and you did a good job, Mr. Izzo.
Cole.
Thank you.
Yes. Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you, sir. Next.
The second project is known as the Woods on Wall Street. Second project is known as the Woods at Walls Creek. The developer is Frank Rubino Companies, LLC. It's a 60-lot subdivision. It's located off Carey Lane, just southeast of Georgetown. Public Works has indicated the remaining work is a final layer of pavement and repairs to said pavement. For the Conservation District, remaining work, the ponds need to be excavated to their design bottom elevation. The 10-foot safety bench area needs to be reconstructed. Top of bank needs to be elevated on all ponds. There's a pipe that needs to be installed adjacent to lots 30 and 31. And then there's overall extensive work needs to restore the ponds. Planning and zoning has indicated that the landscaping along the entry road does not appear to be located properly. As far as on this project, we have one bond for stormwater and a separate bond for the roads. So it's outstanding whether I can repair any of the landscaping called for by planning and zoning. We would have to resolve that with the bonding company. In September of 2011, we began receiving letters from the residents of the development, mainly calling for the uncompleted work to be completed. In October of 2011, we received an email from Robert Galabondi. Robert is an attorney that represents M&T Bank, and Robert is here this morning, I should mention. And he indicated that the bank would like for Sussex County to make claims under the bonds to complete the improvements as well. Based upon those contacts from both M&T and the residents, I sent my letter to Mr. Paul Rubino, who represents Frank Rubino Companies. Again, I was requesting a status of completion of the construction for this work. In November, Mr. Rubino replied. He advised that the property was taken back by the bank, and it's out of his control. And he referred me to a Mr. Frederick Ross, who is a vice president with M&T Bank. So we followed through with Mr. Ross. Mm-hmm. We sent a letter to Mr. Ross requesting the status of the completion of the construction. Mr. Ross responded on November 29th, basically stated that he believes that the responsibility lies with the original project developer to complete the improvements. So it's apparent that neither party is going to move forward to complete the improvements. Also, more recently, Mr. Phillips received a letter from several residents, homeowners in the development, and they also requested that Sussex County call in the bonds to complete this work. So it does not appear that we have anybody available to complete the work. So we are recommending that we call in the letters of credit.
You have a motion, sir?
Yes, I just have to locate it.
Okay.
Give me a second. There you go. Be it moved that the Sussex County Council finds that the developer of the project known as the Woods at Walls Creek has not acted to perform satisfactory construction of the project and authorize its president to take action to call in the bond numbers K07046480 and K07046492. Held up by Westchester Fire Insurance Company in order to complete the improvements or procure others to complete the improvements in accordance with the approved plans and project requirements.
I'll make that motion.
Motion, Mr. Phillips, second. Mr. Cole, any questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. D.
I'm sorry, Mr.
Wilson.
I have a question here. Maybe it's not the right time, but anyway, it says in number four here, it says the pond should be elevation of 20 feet. What do you mean by that? The pond should be 20 feet deep? Oh.
No, it's located outside the 20-foot easement. In other words, there was an easement 20 foot wide that the pipe should have been located in.
Okay.
And it's outside.
I didn't read it that way.
Okay. Any more questions from council?
Yeah, real quick, Mike. What is the procedure that the county does to finish a project? If you could quickly, because I've had somebody ask me, like, you know, is the county going to do it? Say, well, we don't have carpenters
and this and that.
How do we do it?
In most cases, if it's just a final layer of pavement, it's very easy for us to bid out to a contractor, come in and pave the road.
Right.
In some projects, when there's work that is completed, but it was not completed properly, we may actually have to engage either a surveyor or an engineering firm to come in and perform as-built to determine what's wrong with what was constructed.
Mm-hmm.
So when there's just outstanding work to be completed, we can put a bid out on the street very quickly.
Okay.
But it's the difficult ones is where the work was not properly completed and we have flooding or ponding or... In this case, we have a pipe located outside an easement. We would need somebody to verify.
Well, when
that.
It sounds like we're going to finish the project for these people, they want to say, you know, oh, okay, we're going to send our crews out or something like that. So I just wanted to make sure that each project is different and your approach to solving the solutions is different.
Right.
Okay.
Mr. President?
How about Mr. Phillips?
Mike, back to the elevation terminology. It's in the letter, I guess, from Roger Gross. In number one, for instance, it says all ponds were to be constructed to elevation 13 feet. That references depth.
That's correct. And that would be based upon the approved plans. And this is one of those gray areas where we probably would hire a surveyor to go in and perform as-built of the project so we could compare those elevations to the approved plans.
All right, good.
Any more questions of council? Take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you, Mr. Rizzo.
You're welcome.
Mr. Rizzo's report. Mr. Lawson?
Yes. Thank you, Mr. President. Only two items today. Item number one, Delaware Solid Waste Authority reports. There were 22,246 pounds of recycled material received at the recycling pod at the West Complex in Georgetown. During the months of January and February 2012, attached are the reports. And item number two, foreclosure prevention workshop. The Sussex County Community Development and Housing Office, in collaboration with the Attorney General's Office, will be holding a foreclosure prevention workshop this Saturday, March 31st, at the county's West Complex administrative offices. Homeowners that are having difficulty with their mortgage payments are encouraged to attend this free workshop anytime between the hours of 2 and 5 p.m. Representatives from 5 mortgage lenders and servicer institutions will be available to discuss mortgage terms and make on-site modifications. In addition, the AG's office and HUD-approved counseling agencies will present information regarding new federal and state programs, the foreclosure timeline in Delaware, and financial literacy education. A flyer for this program is attached with additional information. Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mr. President.
Good. Mrs. Webb, Pension Committee recommendations.
Okay. On March 9th, the Pension Committee met. The minutes of that meeting were put in your packet. The committee had 4 goals of that meeting that we wanted to accomplish. We had new members, new member orientation with 2 new additional community members and a retiree position on the committee. So we brought them up to date of the steps the committee has taken over the last few years to have an investment policy statement and to work with a consultant. We want to maximize returns with the lowest risk tolerable. We want to analyze our current investments in the OPEB plan and determine if they're the best choice for us, and overall maintain a healthy pension and OPEB plan, which may bring changes in the future for new employees and how they affect our pension plan. We've talked about that before. We needed to look at rebalancing the portfolios for both the pension and OPEB plans. As December, we made our annual contribution, and each plan got an additional contribution at that time. And then what options for service, future service, from our advisor, consultant, Pierce Park Group. Pierce Park Group had prepared a report which detailed our accomplishments and our performance and rebalancing recommendation and future services possibly needed or desired moving forward, and you got that report in your packet as well. But today we need to concentrate on rebalancing. That needs attention today as we have made contributions to our investments. Rebalancing means to realign our investments to match our target allocation in our investment policy. Following our investment policy is very important as it's our guide to obtain the desired result from our pension plan. And the allocation of the investment policy keeps us diversified, which is the best course of action for moving forward and handling the volatility in the stock market while it arises. This is a living event. The pension plan is to continue beyond with the county as the county grows. So it's our due diligence, really, to adhere to our policy. In the letter that I prepared for you were some recommendations, and in the report were some recommendations of how to rebalance. And the committee had decided which rebalancing is the best way to get to our target allocation, which is just a matter of reducing investments in some while increasing in others. So looking at our target and our actual investments, how the year comes out and which investments did well, giving them more value, and then the additional contribution and how we want the makeup to be. I can go into detail of each fund if you'd like about, for instance, in the OPEB, we had too much cash, so we wanted to take some of the cash and put it back up in the investment accounts as detailed. And in the pension fund, same kind of thing. We had to really there balance out our global. We had to bring it down some and put some back into the large cap and decrease our cash there as well. And then pension consultant services, advisory services moving forward. Up to this time, we had only had annual services provided by Pierce Park Group, but they did make a presentation and a proposal to the committee to see if possible quarterly performance reports would be wanted or desired on our plans and each investment manager, any kind of investment policy review, any kind of consulting work is needed, any kind of rebalancing, and perhaps when we look at getting new investments, new managers to completely work on diversifying our portfolio as we move forward. I do have motions, but I know it's a lot to, it's, you know, a lot of pension work.
Let's have the motion, we'll get a second, then we can have questions.
Okay. B, Be it moved that the Sussex County Council approve the following pension allocations. For the OPEB fund, the recommendation is to add $250,000 to Allianz RCM Discipline, $600,000 to Dodge and Cox Global, $400,000 to Harding-Luebner Global, and decrease cash, making it balanced by $1,250,000.
That's your motion.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any questions on that motion?
No.
We'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
Be it moved that...
Go ahead, please.
Be it moved the Sussex County Council approve the following pension allocations. For the pension fund, the recommendation is to add $2,583,725 to DuPont Capital Investments, add $2,100,000 to Fidelity Low Price Stock Fund, decrease the Vanguard Global Investment by $783,725, decrease the Wilmington Trust Account Fixed Income $3,100,000, and decrease in pension fund cash account $800,000, rebalancing those investments.
Entertain that motion.
So moved.
Second.
A motion, Mr. Cole. Second, Mr. Phillips. Any questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Phillips.
Yes.
Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
And of course, both of those recommendations were recommended by the pension committee. Right. I wouldn't make them. And then the last motion is to enter into consulting services from Pierce Park Group at 10 basis points. Mm-hmm. That would be roughly right now, depending on the value of our assets, $77,000. Both Newcastle County and Kent County do quarterly reviews on their pension plan as well. Kent County pays $28,000, but they only do that on their pension plan, not on their OPEB. And Newcastle County pays $161,000 for their pension fund. So we're about in the middle, but it's a recommendation the committee thinks we need to go there now with a $77 million pension plan. That
keep closer.
Keep closer, these, you know, just keep balancing it, you know.
Entertain that motion.
So moved.
Motion, second. Mr. Cole. Second, Mrs. Deaver. Any question on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Phillips.
Yes.
Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you, Mrs. Deaver.
Thank you. And we will be reporting back quarterly now, so more timely information to the council.
Sure.
Thank
Mr.
you.
Cole,
all right. Now, we've done very well, I want everybody to know, with the pension and the pension funds. And
yes.
we're way ahead of the rest of the country in some of these issues. But my concern is, as we go in the future, and we got this new committee now, we got some new people on it, are we going to, in the near future, address reforming maybe our pension fund in light of the problems we've seen across the country with not being able to, you know, to sustain these Cadillac programs? So as we get new hires, not to mess with, you know, not to put any issues or any problems on our current employees and what they've got, and we don't want to take anything from anybody, but as we hire new people, you know, and going into the future, you know, I'd love to see some options for new hires and a new pension fund that will be sustainable into the future, because even though we've done very well, and it could be because of all that growth we had, and we and the county threw so much money into the pension fund, and we've done a great job, like I said, funding it. So yes. but I'm again concerned about the future and future councils, what they'd have to deal with in case there's a problem. So can I request that this new pension fund address that issue and put it on their, you know, top of their agenda? Because I think we need to start, and we need to start now as we hire new people.
Well, yeah.
Yes, and I believe you might have stepped out to the bathroom. It is a goal for 2012 to maintain the health of the pension plan moving forward with
right.
new employees.
Right.
And there's work being done right now with our actuary with options and choices that we will be bringing back later.
All right,
so this will be the year that we really fine-tune that and determine what's available, what options we like. So that, absolutely.
Right.
Okay. Yeah, just because there's a perception out there that, you know, that public pension funds are mm-hmm. are pretty grandiose, et cetera, and there was excuses years ago to do that, because a lot of times the pay scales are very low, so we gave nice pension packages. But now it seems that many of our county jobs are good, well-paying jobs, highly qualified people, and the pension funds not, you know, similar to the private sector. We're awful generous, and I don't know if we can continue to be that. So I would like to see that, yeah, on a priority list of some sort?
Thank you, Mrs. Webb.
If anybody else has, you know, supports that.
Oh, yeah, we're already doing it.
I just would like to see it in a report that they're actually trying to.
We're working that way. Yes, we will.
Okay.
You okay?
Yep, great. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ms. Webb, what level is the pension fund currently funded?
The actuary year end is December, so the only one I can go by is a year ago because we just about to get a draft of our new one for the budget of our pension contribution. But from memory, I believe the pension fund is 93% funded and the OPEB is 77% funded, and that's the one that is highly unusual that it's funded at that level.
Very
good. That's the dedication of the budgeting process in the council and of bringing that up to the next level.
Very good. Thank you.
Thank you, Mrs. Webb.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Robertson. Updates and corrections to Sussex County subdivision and zoning codes.
Thank you and good morning. This morning, what I'd like to do is just basically, as the agenda states, provide an update. It's been a little bit of time since I was tasked with going through the code to see if there's any issues that needed to be brought current or corrections that need to be made, because there really hasn't been that thorough of a review over the past couple of years. And we did that last fall, and of course now we have Mr. Lawson on board, so the thought was for me to just come back through and kind of give council an update as to where we are now. We also have the benefit of a young man named Andrew Dolby, who's an intern with the Planning and Zoning Office, who really comes to us with a fresh set of eyes, so he can take a look at the code without any prior experience and read through it and see if there's anything that he picked up looking at it again that needed to be updated or corrected as well. So what we've done is we've put together some proposed ordinances and corrections, and as I've told the council before, and again, maybe not for Mr. Lawson's benefit, but what we were going to try to do is address the ones that were more clerical in nature first. And so the plan is I'm just going to kind of recite those again to you today, and then we'll put them back on an agenda maybe the next meeting or the meeting after that for introduction, mm-hmm. So that they can go through the public hearing process. Just to kind of highlight some of those really quickly, one of the things is the code still has a sort of a side view or a cross-section of the typical road sections in Sussex County, which is not the same cross-section that county engineering uses. So it's an appendix to the code. We need to get that out of there. Whenever there's an amendment to a subdivision, there's a vote that must occur in certain situations. We've put together an ordinance that clarifies how that would work, so there's no question as to how you count the votes or who counts as a property owner. There was an outdated section in the code regarding the nature and number of Planning and Zoning Commission meetings. It sort of set a guideline for when you needed to have those meetings, which really didn't fit with how we handle things here in Sussex County. There was a typographical error in one of the sections of Chapter 99 that we need to fix. It basically was a duplication that just was there without any real purpose. One of the things that we've found with regard to the zoning code is that there's not a real good definition of what substantially underway means for conditional uses and whether a conditional use is abandoned or not. There is some similar language in the subdivision code which we've applied to conditional uses, but so that there's no questions for the county or for property owners or developers, we've proposed some language that would clearly set that out.
Mm-hmm. And if it's property is transferred and the conditional use is pending, then that new owner is under the same schedule as the former owner.
That's correct. Okay. It's driven by the date of the approval.
Okay.
Right?
Okay.
It wouldn't have any bearing on the transfer date.
Okay.
There was a basically an omission in one of the tables in the zoning code with regard to setbacks for the CR1 district when that district was created. There is the setback specifications, but there's sort of a one table you can go to look at all the different districts, and the CR1 district wasn't included in that, so we would add that in there. We've added a code section that deals with the validity of site plans for RPCs. Those are in the code treated the same as subdivisions. But we just wanted to make clear that the site plan would also be treated the same as a subdivision for how long it would be valid,
okay.
So that anybody, again, who has an RPC or a property owner would know, how long their site plan is valid. Now, just for point of clarification, the ordinance that was recently adopted that extended site plans, that also would apply to RPC, so they would be treated the same way as subdivisions on that too. So, and that's all within that umbrella. We also found that there were some inconsistencies in parking space dimensions within the code. There's actually sort of one total area dimension that's given for commercial parking spaces. Then in another place in the code, there is a actual dimensional specification given that's, and they don't match up. And actually, we had that come up at the Planning and Zoning Commission level when we were reviewing a commercial site plan. The actual engineer came and said, you know, what does this mean? Because there's an inconsistency in the code. So that's something else that we will bring for introduction. And then the other things that we'll continue to work on is, for example, with subdivisions, a concise set of guidelines for sidewalks so that engineers, applicants, the county, property owners, they'll know that if they are applying for a subdivision in either a certain area or whether it's a cluster versus a standard, whether it's a developing district versus one of the other outlining areas, that they know they either have to have sidewalks, sidewalks on one side of the street, or no sidewalks at all are required. And also, we're trying to tie that in with the street design requirements as well, whether sidewalks should be included on a swale-type design or curb and gutter. So that, again, people that come in front of the county will know, okay, this is what we need to have when we design a subdivision. So those are the kinds of things that we're working on and we'll continue to work on. And what I hope to do is come back within the next couple of meetings with those for introduction.
Yeah, the key is definitions, because that's over the years it's just been a lack of a real good clear definition. Like on abandonment, for years I could never figure out, you know, when they were abandoned or not. I mean, does it still mean that possibly that if there's certain infrastructure put in, that even though there hadn't been any activity in 2 years, just because they've put in some infrastructure, have they crossed some kind of magic threshold or
that's
what?
Substantial.
That's the way we kind of looked at it. It would be that, you know, if they put in some infrastructure, that sort of tolls that substantial completion issue, but then they can be into the abandonment side. So, you know, in other words, once you start doing some work and then you leave it, if 2 years elapse, then it would be deemed abandoned.
So there's going to be, okay, mm-hmm. There will be separate. And on the sidewalks you just referenced, is there going to be like a minimal a width or any, is there any national standards on sidewalks, or could they look like, could it be 2 feet wide, could it be feet wide, or
there are some standards, and that's one of the things that Andrew is really researching as well, because you get into ADA issues on the
width of sidewalks. Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I know there are.
That's a good question, too.
Mm-hmm. I don't care if, you know, the type of material, but I'm sure with width and, mm-hmm. and how they come off of curbs and stuff like that. Okay, so we will include that.
Mm-hmm. And we need it, too, because we've had some issues with planning and zoning about developers or engineers or even property owners coming back and questioning whether they need the sidewalk or not, particularly if it's in a swale. A lot of times they'll, you know, have shown a sidewalk on a site plan, then they'll get the stormwater management side designed and approved by the conservation district, and we find that the sidewalks and the drainage plan don't necessarily mix well. You end up with a sidewalk on the side of a swale. So that's the kind of thing we need to deal with on sidewalks, so that up front everybody knows this
sure.
is what you mm-hmm. either have to do or don't have to
okay.
do.
Okay. We'll look forward to seeing.
I bet if someone has already started their project and they've banned it somewhat and go back and forth, aren't they grandfathered? This year, what you're talking about would not have no effect on them, right?
Well, it would on the abandonment side, because there is currently a requirement in the code that says that this conditional use would lapse if it's abandoned. So that's not adding something new.
But how are you going to define what's abandoned?
Well, and that's
what they're going to do.
That's what we're going to do, because the problem has always been, you know, it's sort of the eyeball test. You go out and look to see if it's abandoned or not. And what we want to do is have some period of time that says, okay, nothing's been done for 2 years. So that way we'll know it's been abandoned.
I wouldn't consider a piece of land that's been a project that started and took a couple years off, I wouldn't consider that abandonment, not in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Because right now there's a slack period, no development, no anything going on. So it may go on for 3 or 4 years. So I don't think that would be a fair time limit.
Well, and that's the kind of thing when it's introduced, we can talk mm-hmm. about as well. You know, before it's introduced, we can make that change.
After all, these people went clear through all this time of hearings and everything else, and then we go along and say, "Oh, after a couple of years, we're considering abandoning," and the land has never changed. Nothing's changed.
Yeah, no, And that's fine. That's the kind of thing, like I said, when
sure.
when it's introduced, we can talk about that. And all these have to go through the public hearing process.
Sure.
So.
Yeah.
Mrs. Deaver?
Yeah, I just recently met with a group and talked at length to a disabled veteran, and she's telling me that our access is questionable. And I'm wondering how compliant are we with the ADA in all these plans?
Well, that's sort of a broad question, and it depends on what access she's talking about. Because
disabled access, yeah.
I mean, okay. Well,
to a building or to a side? I mean, there's all kinds.
Any of our requirements? Are we requiring compliance with ADA?
Well, a lot of the ADA requirements are incorporated into the building code issue. So,
fine.
So that way it would be, and the same thing with Delta entrances and sidewalks and things like that.
Okay.
And the county inspectors are also very familiar with the ADA requirements, you know. Yeah,
thank
so
you.
It's all being looked at.
That's what I needed
closely.
To know. Mm-hmm.
Is the width of the sidewalk a requirement or a suggestion?
On our approvals, when it comes to planning and zoning, it would be, if it's approved requiring a sidewalk, you know, then they would have to have the sidewalk. The width is not specified, and that's when you get more into the design, the engineering of it, and that's when the ADA requirements sort of, I guess, are overarching over everything would be. And I believe it's 5 feet, but I'm not totally sure.
Mm-hmm. It seems excessive, and in light of cost, some of these country developments probably wouldn't need that much. Is there a provision or a way that excessive cost could be avoided?
I don't know that you could avoid, if you build the sidewalks, you can avoid the ADA requirements. What the discussion at planning and zoning has been more, not the width of the sidewalks, but on more country rural developments, whether you need the sidewalks at all.
Okay.
You know, and that seems to be the more threshold consideration, because there's less traffic and it's a, you know, 3/4 acre lots. I don't want to just walk in the street, you know, and it's not such a risk. Whereas if you have a large cluster development that's more in a town center or a development district, there's more traffic, more people, and then maybe it's more appropriate to have sidewalks.
Thank you, sir. Look forward to your return.
Thank you.
Thank you. We'll move on our agenda. We're going to move to the scheduled 10:45 public hearing. We're now at 10:55, so we're good to go with that. Mr. Moore.
Yes, thank you, Mr. President. At this time, we'll have the public hearing on a proposed ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County to permit garage studio apartments with parking as special use exceptions in GR general residential districts. At the beginning of the hearing, there will be a brief presentation by Mr. Abbott. He will explain the ordinance and purposes to be accomplished by it. After he has completed his presentation, Council will have an opportunity to ask questions or to clarify their understanding of the proposed ordinance. After that process has been completed, I will open the floor to comments and questions from members of the public. If any member of the public wishes to be heard concerning this ordinance, you're required to make that statement from the speaker stand. Before making your statement, please state your name and give your home address. Mr. Abbott?
Good morning. The Planning Commission held their public hearing on February 23rd of this year. Briefly, the ordinance is an amendment which will allow for a special use exception for garage studio apartments in the GR general residential district, which would be consistent with the same type of special uses that are permitted in AR1, AR2, and MR. An applicant would be required to go to the Board of Adjustment. The garage apartment cannot exceed 800 square feet. Mr. Lank summarized the proposed ordinance. Mr. Johnson stated that he feels this amendment will bring the GR district in line with the other residential districts. Mr. Burton, Mr. Ross, and Mr. Wheatley agreed. There were no parties present in support of or in opposition to this ordinance amendment. There was a motion and a second, and it carried unanimously to forward this ordinance amendment to the County Council with the recommendation that the ordinance be approved, since it makes the GR General Residential District consistent with special use exceptions listing in other residential districts, and that motion carried 4-0.
Mm-hmm. Pretty much just a housekeeping, right? Because we did it everywhere else. We forgot, we pretty much left it out here.
We did it a few years ago. It was the AR,
right.
Mm-hmm. AR2, and okay. MR. And
logically, it probably didn't make sense to leave it out of this district.
Out of the GR. Right. I think there's been, talking to the secretary to the board, there's been 5 to 8 applications that have gone to the board, and they've all been granted.
Mm-hmm.
One of them.
Good.
One was turned down, which was a variance to exceed the 800 square feet. They granted the special use, but they denied the variance.
So, but there still is the ability to like, if you, instead of 800, you were 850 or 900.
Still have the right.
You still have the ability to ask for that extension. Okay, good.
Correct.
Okay, great.
Correct.
Sounds like it's working.
Any questions? More questions from council of Mr. Abbott?
If there's no other questions at this point, is there any member of the public that would like to speak? Yes, sir.
Good morning. My name is Dan Kramer, 8041 Scott Store Road. Here we go again. We got a stupid ordinance again to allow somebody to add on to their house. But before they can add on to the house, they got to go out and first they got to kiss their neighbors. And then they got to come in and kiss some idiot back here. And I'm tired of hearing that you got to come in to get a special use exception for something that ought to be given at any given time. I'll give you a good example. Suppose you have a developer building houses. Man and wife comes along and says, well, we'd like to have an in-law section here. Oh, but before you can do that, you got to go get a special exception, when it should be automatically a given right for that guy to put that in there in the development. And if you already own a house, you ought to have the right to do it without having to kiss somebody's duck beforehand. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anyone else that would like to speak to this issue? Anyone else? Seeing none at this point, Mr. President, we can close the public hearing on this matter, and it's up to the council if they would like to act on this now or defer.
Can we close it?
Sure.
Well, we'll close the public record, and without any questions or comments, we'll close the public hearing.
There's no
okay with council. Okay. Mr. Phillips.
Mr. Moore, is it possible that an amendment to this ordinance could be made today to satisfy the person's request that this be by right, as opposed to having to go through a special use exemption?
I believe that that would be difficult because this ordinance as proposed specifically states that it would be as a special use exception. So it would be amending it such that it was not advertised. So I believe that we could not amend it that way today.
How would I go about seeking an ordinance that would satisfy his desire?
We could draft an ordinance. The ordinance could be introduced by council. Then there would be a public hearing before planning and zoning and council.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I don't know that if now is the appropriate time, but that is something I think we should consider.
All right, well, let's deal with what we got on the table today, get this done, because we have to do it in all the districts if whatever Mr. Phillips is proposing.
Mm-hmm.
We will open the floor up for a motion if someone chooses.
Yeah, I'll make a motion. We adopt the ordinance.
Second.
I have a motion and a second. Any questions on the...
Prior to the vote, if I just read the short title.
Yes, sir.
And I'm sorry.
Ordinance to amend Chapter 115 of the Code of Sussex County to permit garage/studio apartments with parking as special use exceptions in GR General Residential Districts.
I'll make that motion.
Motion, Mr. Cole. Second, Mr. Phillips. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote. Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Mr. Phillips.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you, sir. We'll now go back to the agenda. We'll go to old business.
This is an old business item. The Planning Commission held their public hearing on December 8th of 2011. The County Council held their public hearing on January 3rd of 2012. On the 8th, the Commission deferred action. They reviewed this under old business on January the 26th. Mr. Johnson stated that he would move that the Commission recommend approval for CU 1915 based upon the record made at the public hearing and for the following reasons. One, the applicant's father started this business almost 30 years ago as a mobile home installation business. It has been operated from the applicant's property as well as his father's property throughout this time, and it has evolved over the years. Two, the location of this business is appropriate since it will centrally be located to serve municipalities, developments, and business customers desiring the type of services offered. 16 property owners in close proximity to the property have signed a petition in favor of the application, and several parties spoke in favor of the application during the public hearing. With the proposed conditions, the use will be as secure and unobtrusive as possible and will not have an adverse effect on neighboring properties or the community. Most of the applicant's business activities occur off-site, so there will not be a great deal of noise or other activities occurring on the site. And this recommendation is subject to the following conditions. A, the applicant shall install a solid wood or vinyl covered barrier fence at least 6 feet in height to screen the property and use from neighboring properties and roadways. There should not be any dirt piles, dumpsters, equipment, debris, etc. outside of the fenced-in area. B, any dumpsters on the site shall be covered at all times to prevent the scattering of construction waste or other trash and debris onto the site of neighboring properties. As stated by the applicant, landscaping must be installed along the perimeter of the driveway, parking and storage areas to improve the property's appearance and to have it blend in with nearby residential properties. A landscaping plan showing these areas shall be supplied at the same time as a final site plan. D, any security lights shall be downward screened so that they do not shine on neighboring properties or roadways. E, one unlighted sign not to exceed 32 square feet in size shall be permitted. F, the location of all parking, storage areas, fences, and dumpsters shall be shown on the final site plan. G, no mobile or manufactured homes shall be stored or located on the site at any time without a valid placement permit from Sussex County. And finally, the final site plan shall be subject to review and approval of the commission. And there was a motion and a second. It carried 4 votes to forward this application to the council with the recommendation that it be approved for the reasons and with the conditions stated. And the motion carried 4-0. Mr. Ross is abstaining.
Mm-hmm. I have a question. What is the timeline for some of these conditions?
This one, well, if you approve it, they have 3 years. But
to complete the landscaping and all of the other, and getting some of the things out of there that shouldn't be, okay.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Once they bring in the site plan, usually they start, and we've had our inspectors, we've got a couple of them that have been violations where if you guys grant the approval, mm-hmm. they start the process pretty quick.
Okay, good. That's good to know.
Any more questions from the council?
Yeah, I got one.
The dumpsters were an issue. The location of the dumpsters, you know, a lot of times people put them right up on the property lines of a neighboring property, and that's where the mess comes. Will the final site plan review address location of dumpsters?
Yeah, if
I know you, hopefully,
if the Vandrinians brought it out near the front of the property, I could probably guarantee that commission will say no.
Okay, well, I'm just saying we are addressing that because a lot of times the placement of dumpsters becomes a,
yeah, that's
a sore point.
That'd be site plan driven.
Okay, I just want to make sure that's covered. No other question. Thank you.
We'll start with George. It says he's been there almost 30 years.
That's right.
The dumpster?
No, in his business. Number two, the property owners near him said they have no problem what he's been doing. So I don't see any problem with this application.
Mm-hmm. I just said the dumpster. I didn't say anything about the application.
Well, we didn't need to worry about too much other things.
Mm-hmm. All right. Any more comments or questions from council? If not, we'll entertain a motion.
We'll need to
read the short title.
As an ordinance to grant a conditional use of land in an AR1 agricultural residential district for a manufactured home installation business and related equipment storage to be located on a certain parcel of land lying and being in Georgetown 100, Sussex County, containing 3.0 acres more or less, with conditions A through H as read by Mr. Abbott into the record and contained on page 4 of the old business handout that was given in your packet.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Now entertain a motion.
I'll second it.
Motion, yes, Mrs. Deaver. Second, Mr. Wilson. Any questions on the motion? We'll take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
You know, I just, it has been there 30 years, and it's not particularly the same as the other types of structures in the area, but I believe planning and zoning did a very good job, And I would vote yes, and I would cite the reasons and with the conditions that they asked for.
Mr. Cole?
I'll vote yes with the conditions.
Mr. Phillips? Oh, I'm sorry.
No, I just think it's...
I'll vote yes with its history and the fact that planning and zoning has placed so many conditions on it. I think it'll be fine.
Mr. Wilson?
I vote yes for P&Z.
It has been in existence for 30 years. It seems that the neighbors are okay with it being there. And with the conditions planning and zoning is placed on it, I agree with those. I will vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Bob Stewart. Oh, Bob Stewart. Paramex Station 103, lease renewal. Morning, sir.
Morning, ladies and gentlemen. I come before you today to seek approval for a new lease. It's actually a remodel of an existing lease that's been in effect for 5 years. It's been reviewed by council, Mr. Moore's office, as well as risk management. It includes some additional language required by both parties. It also has been reviewed by our lawyer. You need any different? You've been provided copies for your review. Do you have any additional questions or concerns?
Questions from council? You have a motion, sir?
Yes. Motion for be it moved that Sussex County Council approve a new lease agreement for Paramedic Station 103 and special operations between Sussex County Council and John H. Parker Sr., representing J. and Y. Parker Family LP for a period of 5 years from April 1st, 2012 through March 31st, 2017, as per the terms and conditions of the lease.
Entertain a motion?
Yes, I'll make a motion.
Motion, Mrs. Deaver.
Second.
Second, Mr. Cole. Any questions on a motion?
Where is this piece of land we're leasing?
It's in the Country Gardens Business Complex in Dagsboro, North Dagsboro.
Dagsboro, north of Dagsboro. Hmm? Any more questions from council?
And what do we rent, the building and the land?
We rent the building. He provides parking and access, egress to and from.
How big is this building?
4,480 square feet is what we rent.
4,480
square feet.
I just look at the price tag.
What's that work out per square foot?
Exactly 89 cents.
How much?
89 cents.
You're kidding.
No.
Or is it $8 and 9 cents?
Depending on whether it's a year or what.
Year.
Yeah.
Per year.
I'd have to figure that out per year.
Okay. Per year, I think it's a little bit, it's times 12, I guess.
It'd be times 12.
Said.
I thought
it falls in line with our other stations. It's actually not the highest station that we currently rent.
It's what? It's the highest what?
It's not the highest station that we currently
not the highest cost station we have.
It does include space for special operations, the paramedic station, and a small fitness center that's on the second floor.
What?
Fitness center that's on the second floor.
Fitness center?
Fitness center.
Got to keep them fit, Sam.
More questions from council.
How long is the lease for? I'm sorry.
5 years.
$250,000.
We would like to have a new building in the future, but we also know that with the economy, that's also a difficult thing.
We could almost buy one for $250,000, Bob.
Have we thought about?
I realize that.
Putting a permanent station.
A lot of money.
Yes, we have. We have discussed.
Can't find anything good.
It's just the cost of buying something is mm-hmm. anywhere is going up. Property values in that area are increasing as the beach moves west. We have looked at a couple places that were suggested by Mr. Baker, our previous county administrator. I've also shared those with Mr. Vincent. And you're not going to get a piece of property down there right now for probably less than $500,000 to $750,000 for a property that's big enough to do what we want to do. We have talked about in the future of possibly shedding some services that we currently provide. We're charging for those services because we provide some services for hazmat service in the county that we currently house those units in that special operations center. If we end up charging for special events, which we consider doing in the future, mm-hmm. We might also be able to recoup some of our costs of renting a facility or offset costs of buying a facility. I think it would be ultimately in the best interest of the county long-term to buy a facility, buy a piece of ground and build a facility. But I think it also has to meet our needs, but not necessarily exceed our needs, but provide some room for growth should we decide to stay in any of those businesses that we currently provide services for.
Mr. Cole.
A quick question, then. In light of what I just heard here, we got a 5-year term.
if we found a piece of property within the 5 years.
We have the option to opt out.
We have languages in here that we can get out of this thing without being penalized.
Yes.
Immediately.
I'm asking.
I would have to go back and look at the lease, to be honest.
You're saying we do.
There is an opt-out clause.
Is there any penalties with the opt-out clause or anything? I mean, we do like 30-day notice or 60-day notice?
60-day notice.
Okay, but other than that, no financial penalty?
No financial obligation or penalty for providing.
Because property values do keep getting low. Frank, heck, I'll take one, Frank.
Yeah, that's good service.
Any more questions of council? We'll take a vote. Mrs. Dever?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
How about yes, motion carried. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
This is Webb grant requests.
Okay.
Tell Frank I'll take a BLT.
First one today, the Sunshine Circle Club. I need to defer on if possible, as I'm not made a determination. They are a nonprofit.
Okay.
Takes it to the second one, Allendale Community Civic Improvement Association.
Mm-hmm. And have we given them in the past?
We have by Mr. Rogers. It was a large grant, $5,000.
Oh, yeah, match it.
$5,000.
Match it.
Yes.
What is it?
They are doing a fundraiser and a banquet for their honorees, and they're asking for different contribution levels for sponsors in their pamphlet. Mm-hmm. So, anywhere from $10 to $1,000 at certain levels, like pearl, diamond, bronze, silver.
Well, how about $350 from my account?
Okay.
Second.
Have a motion, Mrs. Dever, second, Mr. Cole, to grant $350 Mrs. Dever's account, the Allendale Community Civic Improvement Association, for annual banquet and fundraiser. Any questions on the motion? Take a vote, Mrs. Dever?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried. Next.
The Delaware Technical and Community College. This is a new grant, although we have supported Dell Tech community programs before. This is a scholarship for 15 children to attend a summer class or camp.
Is there a?
They're requesting $2,500.
Is it a special camp or just camp?
No, it's an academic skill builder sessions, or there's just, they have a variety of kids camps.
Educational,
all kinds of kids camps during the summer.
How much are we talking about?
Well, they're requesting $2,500.
Make a motion we give $200 each.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Cole, second, Mrs. Dever, to grant $1,000 to Delaware Tech Community College for kids on campus scholarship funding, taking $200 from each councilmatic fund. Any questions on the motion? Take a vote, Mrs. Dever?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Phillips?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried.
The Allendale Volunteer Fire Company.
Here we are. Okay. And they're asking for, and they're doing what?
They're hosting the Firemen's Convention at the Allendale Fire Company this mm-hmm. year.
Well, that'll take a lot of money.
And they're just asking for help defraying the cost and anything.
How much they think they're.
Anything that we can afford.
Mm-hmm. All right.
$25.
What did you say?
He didn't say anything. The floor is open for a motion.
You know whose district that is, don't you?
Yeah.
All right.
Well, it does. It's something they're hosting this thing. It's for
everybody.
Delaware, Maryland, Virginia.
Well, then it's very important. That's not just my district, then. That's right. That's right.
We mm-hmm. want to show off for Maryland and Virginia.
I think we better. Yeah.
How much was it more?
$25.
State.
Just assistance. They didn't
define.
They're
asking for assistance to put the convention on. They'd ask for a certain amount, just mm-hmm. where the council could help them with.
Oh, Mr. Vincent, what would you think about that?
He's biased.
You're familiar with
all these. He's biased. He's a fireman.
Yeah.
Well, you know, you ask a fireman.
I think it's reasonable. We maybe give him $100 a piece, $500.
So moved.
Second. Mr. Wilson?
I was
going to
say give him $200.
$200. Is that okay with your motion? Okay with your second?
Second.
Motion is second to grant $200 of each councilmatic district, a total of $1,000 to Allendale Volunteer Fire Company to host the annual Delmarva Fireman's Convention.
Anybody want to say three?
Any questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Dever?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Mr. Phillips?
Yes.
Mr. Wilson?
Yes.
I vote yes, motion carried.
People to People, the Student Ambassador Program, and this student is from Laurel.
I move that we give $100 from Mr. Vincent and $100 from Mr. Phillips.
Have a motion.
Second.
And a second, Mrs. Dever, to grant $200, $100 from Mr. Phillips, $100 from mine, for the People to People Student Ambassador Program for travel expenses. Any questions on the motion? Take the vote, Mrs. Dever?
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Phillips.
Yes.
Wilson.
Yes.
Yes, motion carried.
And Teens in Perspective.
What is that?
This is a statewide leadership development program for girls. However, they sponsor. Participants come from Seaford, Laurel, Georgetown, Millsboro, Milford, Bridgeville, all over Sussex County, or a conference, a leadership conference.
Are we sure
is there a certain monetary request?
And can we be sure that it's sponsoring Sussex County teens?
They have a $500 request. Yeah, we could put that tag on our grant, although
I'll make a motion. We give $100 each, and, yes. And we put the tag that it's to help sponsor Sussex County teens.
Yes.
With Sussex County.
Motion, Mr. Cole. Second Mrs. Deaver. Mm-hmm. To grant $100 each, $500 total to the Teens in Perspective for concert conference participants for Sussex County students. Question on the motion. Take the vote, Mrs. Deaver.
Yes.
Mr. Cole.
Yes.
Phillips.
Yes.
Wilson.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried.
That's it. Thank you.
Thank you. Guy. We're now into any additional business brought before council.
I got to take a break. I'm going to have to.
Sir, what now?
Can I make a statement before we start?
You certainly can. Hold on. Back. Okay.
I know there's going to be a very passionate issue coming before council now, and I did want to just state for the record that the council, at least I understand, that we're dealing with a sensitive constitutional issue, and that the council, through channels, looked into the possibility of asking the Delaware Supreme Court to rule on this issue. And I'm paraphrasing that the issue was, in the opinion of those we asked, the issue was not ripe yet, and that the action that's being taken could potentially ripen the issue. And at that point, in my opinion, the Supreme Court would then be in a position to move forward on the sheriff's issue. And from my perspective in particular, what is meant in the Delaware Supreme or in the Delaware Constitution as conservator of the peace. I mean, we all have very strong opinions of what that means. But again, there's not a clear definition of that. And I know some of you are going to offer those, your opinion as to what that means. But ultimately, it's going to come down to what the Supreme Court views the definition of that is. I just wanted to state that at least I, and I believe the majority of council, is very sensitive to this, and we have attempted to try to get clarity on it. But because of the lack of that clarity, at least from my perspective, I have supported the bill that has been introduced in the General Assembly. If for no other reason, it will ripen the issue so that the Supreme Court can weigh in. I just wanted to make that clear before we proceeded.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Moore, you want to cover public comments and...
Yes, so Will, how many people have signed up, Mr. Vincent?
Nine.
Okay. Traditionally, we allow 3 minutes for each person to speak. The council could opt to have a shorter period of time. However, if they do that, it has to be for everyone across the board, no matter what issue. We can't limit people on one issue and not another. So if you would do that, you would need to do it across the board. And that was the reason for my question, how many we're going to be addressing. Which does not seem to be an extraordinary amount, so we could go ahead. We would ask that you do need to come.
Excuse me, sir. The attorney has the floor.
I'm sorry. What we'll do, each person in order, I believe, will be called to come to the podium. Please give your name and address at that point, and then simply address the council. The council does not respond at that time. The council simply listens to what your concerns are, and then the next person will be called. if you have something, it is not inappropriate, and we do this oftentimes at planning and zoning matters, if you're saying the identical thing that someone else is saying, you know, we've had people just come up, give their name and address so that the council understands their passion about an issue, and simply say ditto, or I agree 100% with what a prior speaker has said. That's not inappropriate to do that. It is going to be the full 3 minutes that each person will have to come up to the podium to speak.
Okay. Having said that, wait a minute, I've lost my list.
Mr. Chairman, may I approach council?
Well, is your name on the list, sir?
I would like to ask for a special one-time exception to the council rules, and I apologize for interrupting you. I thought you had finished. I would like to, we started out the public meeting with a prayer. I would like to start out this meeting. We have so many heroes in our audience. I would like to have a moment of silence for our fallen heroes and their families. I know this is an exception, and I apologize, but I think it's only proper as they give their testimony, they're gonna have to go back out on the street. And then I would just like to appreciate their service to us. They've served 381 years. They go by many different names. Sheriffs, state police, etc. They all have one thing in common. They're all willing to give their life for us, and they have. And if we could have a moment of silence for our fallen officers and their families. Thank you.
We'll do that, sir. We'll now have a moment of silence. Thank you. First, Mr. Dan Kramer.
My name is Dan Kramer, 8041 Scott Store Road. Here's what I see, the way I see it. You guys fell for the whole kit and caboodle. You're in the Agenda 21 garbage. And then you turn around and claim, oh, we're honest people. No, you're not honest, because when you done claim that, oh, we uphold the Constitution, and look, we just had prayer this morning, so we're all Christians. Yeah, give me a break. Here's how you're Christians. Pat me on the back. I go to church on a Sunday, go to hell on a Monday, and then come in and screw the public on a Tuesday. Thank you.
Next, Mr. Ed Funk. Got to get my timer here squared away.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Ed Funk. I'm from Millsboro, Captain's Grant. Here we go again. You know, this Bill 290, it's been a diversion this morning because they've had three places that they expanded to have the people separated because they shouldn't be here. Mr. Hawker has a meeting down in Selbyville right now. I'm a little disappointed in most of this council. It's kind of ridiculous because all we're asking is for you people to realize that there is crime down here. They try to deny it. On March 8th, they had a troopers meeting. And they brought all the big guns out from the troopers from Dover. Now, they must have been running scared about something, because they were worried about us talking to all the seniors at the cheer centers and everything else. Now, fans, you told me you want to work for the people. You're not doing it, and neither is anybody else here. You know, this is just as bad as the corruption we have in our federal government. You know, let's look at this another way. You know, during election time, you people come out of the woods. We never see you. You get all dressed up and you want your votes. You tell us what you're going to do for us. You tell us what your going to promise to have whatever laws made, whatever. Then all of a sudden, these people believe you, and then we vote for you, and you're in. But see, here's the problem. These people that voted you in are your employers, and you are the employees, which you don't recognize. The only thing we're asking, and I ask you this from my heart and from everybody that I go through and talk to, all these seniors that are so scared to death that come out of their houses in the communities, you people want to do a new law under the Constitution, and if that passes, that means every elected official that you don't like, that's been elected by the voters, you can vote out, just like Mr. Vance Phillips wants to vote the sheriff out. Now, the sheriff is not...
If you could speed up, your 3 minutes is up. We'll just try to follow up.
All right, okay. This is a big thing now.
I understand that, sir.
Okay. Now, we're trying to get something done. The sheriff doesn't want to take over the county. All he wants to do is come into the community, help what the state troopers can't do, and we know that they can't do it. You know they can't do it, but it's all about power down here. And the good old boy system is the power. So if we can't get anything done from here, we're going to vote you out.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Earl. Mr. Moore, would you... I think we're looking for if you would do some research here just so we can. Mr. Earl Laughlin. Earl Laughlin, here we go. If you could, sir, try to keep to 3 minutes if it's possible.
Yes, sir. My name is Earl Laughlin. I'm state chairman for the Constitution Party. I'm from Clayton, Delaware. First, I would like to commend you all for the action that you're doing with the Delmarva Fire Police or the Fire Convention. That's very commendable of you.
Thank you.
Yes, sir. Political election of a person to serve the police leaders has been an American tradition for over 300 years. Practice has been followed in the British Channel of Jersey since at least the 16th century. Authorize and deputize as many citizens as needed to preserve the peace. The three counties known as Delaware today, given to the governor of Virginia by William Penn of Pennsylvania, has had a county sheriff who has been a conservator of the peace dating back to the 17th century. In 1776, a Dorman Laughlin was also the county sheriff of Sussex County. Delaware has oftentimes followed our neighboring states, the passage of many laws and following different court procedures and what have you, in the Third District Federal Court. This includes Delaware, Pennsylvania, New Jersey, and also the U.S. Virgin Islands. Both New Jersey and Pennsylvania recognize the county sheriff as having powers to arrest criminals. In one case, Commonwealth of Pennsylvania versus Leet, and I'm not going to give you the citations. If you wish to have a copy of this, I'd be happy to give you all a copy. The sheriff, the duties Judge Carrillo, who presided over the case, even went as far as writing how instinctively we are reminded of Sherwood Forest, where the sheriff of Nottingham was the chief law enforcement. I'm not going to go into the entire scenario of what the judge was saying, but basically he was recognizing that the sheriff did have the power to arrest. According to the Code of Virginia, and I'm not going to give the citation for it, they also recognize the sheriff as a special conservator of the peace. In Delaware Code, Title 10, 2114, it recognizes the sheriff as ex officio shall be a fish and wildlife agent. Back in 1995, I believe it was either 95 or 97, Delaware General Assembly passed the bill, and it was signed into law by the governor at that time. In that bill, the title was an act to amend Title 10 of the Delaware Code relating to the enforcement personnel of the Department of Natural Resources and Environmental Control. This automatically recognized the sheriff, because what they'd done was they were changing the title of the game warden, or the sheriff having title of game warden, down to fish and wildlife agent. He was still recognized as an enforcement agent. Article 15 of the Delaware Constitution, it also states the powers and the authorities of the, as what you had described earlier in the opening speeches of this. Maryland.
Good, kind of close.
Yes, sir.
Up. Thank
I'm
Thank
almost
you.
Closing. In Maryland, the county sheriff is also recognized as, and their deputies as law enforcement officers. They preside over watching over the prison systems. They also have arresting powers. In closing, I would hope that this would, in fact, show proof that Delaware has already enacted for over 300 years the authority for our sheriffs to be having the authority to arrest and investigate crimes. Now, obviously, we've got some issues regarding whether or not the General Assembly is going to decide on this, but I would hope that council members would reflect on this as well.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Don Ayotte.
Honorable council persons and staff, I appreciate Mr. Phillips' opening for this public forum, but I would counter that poor and in consideration that the Sussex County Council has no authority to define the responsibilities of Delaware Sheriff's offices or give an opinion on those responsibilities. I ask that the resolution passed last week at last week's County Council meeting concerning House Bill 230 being forwarded to the Delaware General Assembly be rescinded. We all have a right to our personal opinions, but acting as a body, you have no authority to offer an opinion to the General Assembly on legislature that should be forwarded. The Delaware State Constitution correctly defines responsibilities as conservator of the peace, which is commonly accepted nationally as having law enforcement powers, that of a police officer. I would ask the county council leave the matter of defining those responsibilities to the appropriate court, later to be argued by Delaware Supreme Court. I would say to Mr. Phillips, the situation is ripening. It is ripe. This should be argued before the Delaware Supreme Court after being argued in a lower court. I would also say that our sheriffs are performing a dangerous, very dangerous task in a hard economic time. They are delivering foreclosures notice to people that are at their wit's end. They've lost their property after doing everything. They are evicting people. They are serving protection from abuse orders to a person that's probably already been guilty of that many times, and arriving at the person's door without arrest power, and these people are well aware of that and have no respect for the sheriff's office. In light of the recent lawsuit that we must pay, almost $750,000, I would say that if we send our sheriffs or deputies out to do this job and somebody arrives with a gun and there's a moment hesitation on the part of a sheriff who should be a trained police officer and he loses his life, I don't want to be the one to go to that wife's and son's and daughter's door and say, I'm sorry, your father's not coming home today. He died because we didn't provide him with the authority and the provisions and equipment that he needed to do his job. You think $725,000 is a big lawsuit? You wait until the widow sues you for not doing that. That will be peanuts, gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Eric Bodenweiser.
Fellas, I've been working hard. Been a long week, okay? But I'm coming to you. I got my hat in my hands, okay? I'm humble. I am. I'm humble and I'm meek. I am, okay? My hat's on the ground here, and I'm on my knees. And I'm begging you, please strike this thing. Call Representative Danny Short and tell him we got to take this thing off the record, okay? I'm being as nice as I possibly know how. My God, this thing's on a fast track. On a fast track. The gay discrimination bill was on a fast track in 2009. The civil union bill was on a fast track in 2010. 2011, we want to put this in the same category? Hey, I'll tell you, Vance, a promise of a mere carrot on a stick that, well, this, let's just let us pass this and it'll go to court. That's not going to... That's not going to make it here, okay? We could have had the court case. Any one of these chiefs of police here could have one of their men arrest any of these men right here for false arrest, and the case would be in court already. But they didn't arrest these fellas. Why? Because they knew that wouldn't hold up in court. You guys win. You showed us. You got all the power in the world. You can shove this down our throats if you want. It's, you know, it's obvious. We cry uncle. You win, okay? You got the power. I see our chairman, GOP's got 85% responses against this bill. Chairman of the Republican Party's got 85% of responses on this, was against this bill. I hope somebody here reads that letter into the record. These people that are here, we ask you to stop it today. Why? Because these people here, they got better things to do. They don't want to run up to Dover tomorrow and hoop and holler and run around like that, all that nonsense that the other side does. This isn't Occupy anything. These are the salt of the earth right here. These are your constituents. These are the people who get out and work for you when you want to get reelected. Yes. So let's make peace. Let's make peace today, okay? Call Representative Short and tell him to take this thing off the record. We'll forget it ever happened. Because our Savior said, blessed be the peacemakers, for they shall be called, what? The sons of God. That's Matthew 5, chapter, verse 9. I hope everyone that takes this podium will do the same thing I've done and be humble and meek to you. You do have our respect. You get more bees with honey than you do with vinegar, right? I want you please to forgive me for my activism on this issue. And if you want to take me out back and put the belt to me later, I'll consider that. Sam, you're like a father to me. You are. And I know I'm like a son to you. Your wife told me that. And I hope you forgive me. But please, please, please kill this bill. Okay? Thank you.
Excuse my pronunciation. I think it's William Christie. Is there a William Christie?
He's from Millsboro. No, Milford. Milford. Hi.
Morning. Good morning, Mr. President and council members. My name is William Christie. I live at 24 Valley Forge Drive, Shawnee Acres, Milford, Delaware. I may take a little bit more than 3 minutes because I want to present a certain incident that recently happened in our development. We had a home invasion. The state police didn't respond to that home invasion for 27 minutes. Milford police came out. In 5 years that I've lived in this development, in the 5 years that I've been there, past presidents have tried to get the state police, community liaison officer to come in and help us set up a neighborhood watch program, to no avail. Within a week of the incident that happened, Sheriff Christopher came to my house with his chief deputy, and we sat down and we talked, and he's agreed to come out to our development and talk to the homeowners out there about setting up a neighborhood watch. I have 186 families that live in this development. Of the 186, I would say probably conservatively, 150 are retired, widows. They need protection. When it comes to seconds that you need a response, we can't wait minutes for this to happen. Also, as you can see, I'm wearing a badge. I'm a certified fugitive recovery agent. I am licensed in 10 states to enact an arrest warrant. 48 states in the United States have sheriff powers, have arrests. This is one of the few states that doesn't. Alaska doesn't because they don't have counties, and Connecticut doesn't because they also do not have a county government in Connecticut, but they do have sheriffs who have arrest powers. I, under my powers, can go into any state if I am after a felon, and I can arrest them. The chief officer that I go to is the sheriff's department in the county that I enter to effect an arrest. Now, what I'd like to do, I'm not offering opinions of my own personal opinion of this, but I'm going to offer some court rulings that have come down over the years. Every sheriff is a conservator of the peace within his county, and as much as such is bound to suppress the affray or arrest a breaker of the peace in his view and bring him before a magistrate. Jay Crocker, duties of sheriff's corps and as a constable's, 1871. A policeman is an officer whose duties have for local convenience carved out of old duties of constables, and the constables were always part of the general force at the disposal of the sheriff. There is no division of authority into the sheriff and the police. Each is a conservator of the peace. State versus Williams, 1940. It is repugnant to the concept of a judge sworn to uphold the law that a sheriff required to observe the commission of a breach of peace in his presence and be powerless to prevent it. Such a concept demeans his office and the public regard for it. City of Lincoln versus Siegler, 1970. I pray that you as commissioners will review the decision that you made in several weeks ago. Your decision in the current sponsored bills strips the constitutional power given to the elected county sheriff, and we all need to remember we elected the sheriff. We elected him because he's the best of the best. He's the cream of the crop. We didn't elect him on a popularity contest. We as voters, I know I did, believed that he could get the job done that he said he intends on doing. In closing, I'll leave you with the following 1997 and 1999 Supreme Court rulings and what a decision said. Preserving the peace is unquestionably a legitimate law enforcement function. The justices cited the following profound statement made by Counsel of Law Otis Allen. Duties and Liabilities of Sheriffs, 1845. As the principal conservator of the peace in his county, as the calm but irresistible minister of the law, the duty of the sheriff is no less important than his authority is great. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Sheriff only makes $2,500 a year.
Excuse me, you're out of order. If there's any other disruptions, we can ask people to leave. That is not our desire, and we appreciate everyone so far being courteous. Next speaker.
Scott Witzke.
Before you start my 3 minutes, I have a question for the county attorney. You had read a correspondence from Senator Bunning earlier. Was it you that read it?
Yeah.
Okay. How did you come in possession of that correspondence, if you don't mind me asking?
That is up to the president if he...
So Mike Vincent forwarded that to you? Okay. That was
Excuse me. That's not what he said. No. It's up to the president. This is a time that if you want to address the council, we get correspondence. We're asked to read it. I was given correspondence to read in the ordinary course, which came to me through the administration.
I understand. Okay. Well, just so it's a matter of record, that was a personal email between Senator Bunning and myself that I received from him yesterday at 3:42 p.m., and that was a response to an email I sent to him earlier that day. So you reading that would seem to be out of context.
If you'll wait just a second, Mr. Lawson.
Yes, we were sent that email directly from Senator Bunning's office, and it was our understanding that's the same email or response he sent to a number of his residents in his district. I have a copy if you'd like to review that.
Well, I have it right here.
Your 3 minutes. You have your 3 minutes?
The copy that was sent to the county.
Okay.
You're up.
Well, it would be appropriate to read the lead-in email and the subsequent email to that since you've already read that, and I'm going to read what I sent to Senator Bunning yesterday. Hi, my name is Scott Witzke. I reside in Laurel, Delaware. I'm a 28-year veteran market manager with PBB, which is an international company with holdings throughout the world. I also own and operate an international exportation company for heavy equipment. I'm writing this email to express my disappointment in the proposed House Bill 290. I am urging this bill be voted down in the House. The framers of our Constitution and our forefathers expressly validated and established our sheriff as an effective elected of office, which needs to remain unaltered. It is completely unacceptable to change our state constitution to serve the interest of a few. I appreciate that there are some who have rendered their opinion regarding this interpretation of the role of sheriff. That is just what it is. It's an opinion. In no way to
My mic's off. What's happened with the sound? Did the sound cut off?
Maybe just get a little closer. When
that red light comes on, it means it's on.
Are you pushing?
Maybe it hits. There, it's on. That one's on. Just talk down to that mic. The other one maybe went off.
And that's just what it is, an opinion. In no way does this substantiate the manipulation of our Constitution or our constitutional rights. All elected positions are of the people, for the people, and by the people. This includes your position and that of the sheriff as well. The people you serve have a right to an unaltered, unmolested sheriff's office. The constitutionality of this bill will be challenged with legal mitigation should it be passed. After all, once we start dismantling our Constitution, we have nothing left to believe in. Hopefully, common sense will prevail in this matter, and the trampling of our Constitution will die before it comes to that. Thank you for your consideration in this matter. He sent his email, and I responded back to him. George, thank you for your response, and mostly thank you for your service. The case in point is there is no case for House Bill 290. The current Sussex County Sheriff's Office has never executed an arrest or attempted one. They did on one occasion detain an individual who had an open warrant until proper authorities were contacted. The sheriff is a constitutional arm of the court, and the warrant was court-ordered. I would hope any responsible member of society would do their best to help the authorities apprehend a potentially dangerous individual with an open warrant. That's just being responsible. The suggestion that our sheriff poses a liability threat is unfounded and absolutely false. He is a man of integrity and a decorated, long-standing Maryland law enforcement officer. What I find utterly disturbing is we're considering crafting legislation to change the intentions of our founding fathers and our Constitution. That is inappropriate, unnecessary, and unconstitutional. I need to be clear. I agree with you. I do not want a county police force, nor the costs associated with it. At this time and for the foreseeable future, it would be redundant and expensive. The fact is, I support no increase of manpower or footprint of the Sussex County Sheriff's Office. However, I do support education and certification of the existing number of deputies currently employed by the county. Taking into consideration that some of the individuals holding these positions may not meet the minimum hiring standard and may need to be moved to other positions and replaced with suitable candidates. Our current deputies currently carry guns and execute court-ordered directives. They also bring in a hefty amount of revenue, roughly $4 million annually. The lack of training and certification of these individuals is the larger risk factor. We could easily be opened up to a seven-figure lawsuit. This could include, but is not limited to, a member of the general public that feels violated becoming a potential plaintiff against the county, as well as the family of a slain deputy that holds the county liable for failing to provide proper training or certification for their loved one. Now, those are real concerns that our county council should be addressing. If anyone has opened the county up to a liability, it's not our sheriff. It's our very own Sussex County Council. As stated in the news last week, we had to settle on a $725,000 out-of-court agreement. See Brockstead Land Use Settlement Award for particulars regarding this case. What you might find interesting is and concerning is Brockstead offered to settle this claim non-monetarily. The county council refused to even acknowledge his offer. The end result is an incredibly embarrassing, expensive mistake on the part of our county council. This is not the first major financial blunder either. In free enterprise, if you make a mistake that costs your employer even a few thousand dollars, you may be relieved of your duties. It seems justified to say that if the county council was more focused on doing their job and less obsessed with punishing and limiting our sheriff, we would all be better off. I respectfully ask that we honor the Constitution and the rights of the people by voting against House Bill 290.
Thank you, sir. Your time's up. Dan DeAquia. Maybe I'm murdering that last name. I apologize if I am. DAQUILA. from Georgetown.
Anybody named Dan?
Okay. Robert Cooper.
Good morning.
Morning.
Our founders implemented a way for us to govern ourselves, for the people to govern themselves, not for the Sussex County Council or even for our representative district to govern us. I think we as the people are responsible enough to elect our Sussex County Council members. And if we're not smart enough to elect our Sussex County Council members, then I guess we're not smart enough to elect a sheriff. But we did elect you all. So I feel that we're capable of electing our law enforcement. I think the one reason that this would be very important is that you have a law enforcement that is responsible to the people the same way that you are responsible to us. You're responsible to us because we elect you. So the sheriff is also responsible to us because we elected him, unlike an agency such as the KGB, which is not responsible to the people. They're responsible to their appointed, whoever appointed them. I guess it would be Vladimir Putin. So I think it's important that we keep our sheriff in power and elected by the people, for the people, the same as that you serve by the people, for the people. And I would ask that you would call Danny Short and reconsider your decision that you made. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Moore, I have a question, I guess. There are some people I know have come in since that are not signed up to speak. What is...
I know in the past at times when people had not signed up, didn't realize it was a procedure, the chair has afforded that opportunity, and that's in your discretion. If you've hit that end of the list, and if there are people who did not sign up, that would be appropriate if you wanted to.
Excuse me, sir. I have one more name on the list, Margaret Reyes.
Reyes.
Folks, good afternoon, members of the council, Mr. President, Mr. Moore, Mr. Lawson. My name is Margaret Reyes. I live in Lewis, Delaware, and I need to use my glasses. I do want to check and make sure that this is Sussex County, Delaware. Is everybody in agreement? This is not Pennsylvania. This is not New Jersey. This is not Arizona. This is not Maryland. This is not Connecticut. This is not Maine. This is not Montana. This is Delaware. We have laws in Delaware. Our sheriffs have duties in Delaware, the way Delaware does it. So let's look at the platform that Sheriff Christopher ran on. Implement programs to combat illegal immigration through education and enforcement. My tax dollars. Maricopa County, Arizona, which Mr. Christopher refers to quite a bit, has had 6,300 claims and lawsuits against his office since 1993. The cost to defend, $50 million. Part of that $50 million has gone to defend 5,000 cases, more than 1,828 cases against the sheriff's office, according to the National Lawsuit Database. In comparison, Harris County, Texas, has had 283 lawsuits in the same amount of time. This is a liability, a huge liability. The final category for civil rights violations has cost Maricopa County $26 million. These are frivolous lawsuits. Some of them are also serious that involve death, dismemberment, abuse of power. They are very serious cases. I am looking at 4 to 5 uniformed officers that are not FSLA exempt, with the exception of the elected official, the sheriff, my tax dollars holding up the back wall in this room. Why are they not out on the street serving subpoenas? Why are they not out on the street putting foreclosure papers on people's doors like we pay them to do? I've heard people say to the county council, you work for us. The sheriff needs to be mindful. He also works for us. And I don't see a lot of work being done in the back of the room. Moving forward, some of the supporters and some of the things that the sheriff does support, and I would like to quote from the Constitutional Peace Officers Association, and this is where liability comes in. These local governments will issue our new declaration to the federal government regarding the abuses that we will no longer tolerate or accept. Said declaration will be enforced by our constitutional sheriffs and peace officers. In short, the Constitutional Sheriff and Peace Officers Association will be the army to set our nation free. If that's not sedition, I don't know what is. That is Sheriff Mack's quoted words, and Jeff Christopher supports them. That scares me greatly. Even with UN peacekeepers, they suffer death and loss. I am appalled that we have somebody who is willing to put the Sussex County taxpayer on the hook for this kind of liability. He says in his pamphlets he wanted to reduce liability to the county. There's no reduction in liability here. This is absolutely egregious. In 80 years, we have not seen something like this. Obviously, I'm not 80, but yet. But I haven't seen anything like this happen. We are spending so much time on reining in someone who has overstepped their bounds and authorities. We really need to be focusing on...
If you could... Excuse me, I'll take care of the time, sir. Mm-hmm. Your time's up. You please close up.
Yes.
Like everybody else had a chance to close up.
I'm sorry, I didn't see the egg timer. I would like to say that I support this, and many more people do. Thank you.
Thank you.
You must have voted for Obama then.
Quiet, please.
Sir, we would appreciate you conducting yourself in a gentlemanlike manner. You had your time to speak. Everybody listened to you. You don't need to disrupt the meeting by making comments like that.
I apologize.
Good. Thank
you. Sure. Now then, is there anyone else who has come in that would like... And we're going to keep this thing, we're going to keep this on a time frame. You're first, sir, you're right here.
Excuse me, Mr. Vincent, we do need them to sign in, though, as part of a record. If maybe we can put a sign-in sheet
right
up front
right
by Mr. Guy so we can get name and address She's on the first. Sheet.
Okay.
Menard. Who?
Sandy Menard.
Okay. If you sign that sheet, you can go first, sir. I'm sorry, she'll go first, and you can follow her. And need to keep this to pretty close to a time frame here. Now, then, ma'am, please step right on down here. And you may go first.
Hi. Sandy Menard, 16615 Howard Melman Lane. It's not about whether you like or dislike Sheriff Jeff Christopher. This change is about the office of sheriff. It's about an office that's accountable to the people. To me and to the people that I've talked to and anything that I've heard, it's about punishing a sheriff. But what it actually does is it gives the government more power and it takes accountability away from the people. So I would ask that you, as well as the General Assembly, who represent people, reconsider, call Representative Short, ask him to strike it from the records. And if you can't do that, then I would ask for you to please explain to the people why. Because the only explanation that I've been given is litigation. And every time you sit on this council in these seats, you take the chance of litigation. And so I would ask that you reconsider and have it stricken from the record.
Thank you, ma'am. Excuse me. Come on, Senator.
Thank you, Mr. President, for the opportunity to sign in ex post facto, and that so aptly illustrates one of the key points of this law. My name is Wolfgang von Baumgart. I am the state chairman, the elected state chairman of the Independent Party of Delaware, and the Independent Party of Delaware wholeheartedly condemns and deplores this particular piece of odious, unconstitutional legislation, as it may constitute an ex post facto law contrary to the Constitution of the United States and the contrary to the state of Delaware's Constitution as well. In addition, the general legal principle in our society, it's understood by most of us who at least read the Constitution on an elementary level or an advanced level, is this. We cannot alter a constitutional provision in a said article unless that said article empowers the legislative body to alter the constitutional provision in that article. This particular piece of legislation should be properly and constitutionally put forth before the General Assembly in the form of a constitutional amendment requiring 75% of the General Assembly's ratification in two successive sessions of the General Assembly. The County Council's communications with the State Assembly, while predictable, are unfortunately giving us unintended consequences. Stripping the power of the sheriff arbitrarily to arrest criminals and protect life and liberty in a situation in which a child may be abducted by a sexual predator, where the sheriff only has the power to call 911, is simply unacceptable to the people of Sussex County. Sheriff Christopher has stated repeatedly that he never wanted to have a full-time permanent police force. He simply wants his constitutional powers as were given to him historically and constitutionally. And in fact, this bill, HB 290, is founded on a false historical premise itself that is a piece of disinformation that sheriffs have never had arrest powers when the state's own official history in its archive states to the contrary. And this raises a question of, to put it diplomatically, public disinformation, public official disinformation for the past decade, and I believe that situation needs to be corrected at the polls. And I thank you.
Thank you, sir. John Christensen. Excuse me, sir, for the pronunciation.
My name is Sergeant John Christensen. I worked for Department of Corrections for 16 years. And to tell you the truth, I'm upset about this because working on the other side, working with these fine men and women that stand back here in the back wall, they don't have as hard a job as I do dealing with the individuals they have to have the arrest or whatever. I deal with them 24/7 a day, 16 hours a day, 5 days a week. These gentlemen and ladies put their life on the line just like I do. And for have a fellow brother officer as such do this without the tools to implement the proper use of that he needs to do his job, and I'm outraged. I have arrest powers, and he doesn't, which is not right. So I'm going to vote this bill down.
Thank you, sir. Todd Mumford.
My name's Todd Mumford. I live in Millsboro, Delaware. Most of the people up behind the podium there know me. Quite a few people out here know me. What I see here is, it reminds me of something that Franklin D. Roosevelt said, that there's nothing to fear but fear itself. There's 100%, I'm qualified to say, 100% the reason this bill is going forward is because the folks up here on council fear that six guys can start a county police force. That's absolutely ridiculous. Even if the General Assembly went forth and said, you guys have COPT certification, put lights and sirens on the cars, what are they going to do? They're not going to affect anything as law enforcement goes in Sussex County. I've been a law enforcement officer for 18 years. Been a police officer, been a deputy sheriff, currently a probation and parole officer. One of the things that strikes me really to the core about this latest Attorney General's opinion that has prompted this legislation is the fact that it seems to base the entire premise that arrest authority comes solely from the Council on Police Training. There's one line in all of Delaware Code in Title 11, Section 84, that says, for the purposes of this section, sheriffs, constables, and other people with police power by virtue of their office are not police officers. One line. That's it. Well, you know what? I arrest people almost weekly as a course of business, and my job is a probation and parole officer. This Attorney General's opinion leads me to believe that, wait a minute, I no longer have that power. Because the General Assembly didn't mean that everybody that has arrest power has to be a cop. They meant that the people that do police work as a matter of everyday business, the guys that are on the road responding to complaints, yeah, we want them to have a little bit better certification. But the guys that have other duties, like myself, a probation officer, like the guys that work in the prison, like the deputy sheriffs, like the JP court constables, like the SPCA officers, like the fire police, that have arrest power, they use it on such a limited basis, it was not necessary to have this training. There's no doubt in my mind that's what was meant. Now, the Attorney General has taken what is in law and opined on it. And in my view, they've taken a lawyer to say what they wanted to say versus what anybody else here can read it and say, this is what the law means. Peace officers have arrest authority under Delaware Code. The sheriff is clearly a conservator of the peace. One of the things, back to my position as a probation and parole officer, one of the things that we do when we arrest somebody for violation of probation, we issue what's called an administrative warrant. The text of that administrative warrant will say, I, Todd Mumford, an officer of the Department of Corrections, do hereby authorize any sheriff, constable, or peace officer to arrest and detain whatever individual pursuant to a couple sections of Delaware Code. One of those sections of Delaware Code deals with violations of parole, and it allows anybody that serves process to arrest that person and deliver them to the Department of Corrections. Now, if this training was so all-fired important, why would the legislature allow anybody that serves process the authority to take somebody into custody? The other section allows them, was specifically dealing with violation of probations, any officer authorized by statute to have arrest power. And the sheriff's mentioned, there's no doubt in my mind that this Attorney General's opinion is what prompted this, and the only reason that is being pushed forward is because you folks have a fear that something will happen. Rather than make these wholesale changes that this House bill is going to do, affecting dozens of areas of Delaware Code, why not support a one-liner? Put one thing in Title 10 dealing with sheriffs and come up with some sort of training for these guys. They have it for police, they have it for probation, they have it for corrections. One line, get them training, make it work right, because that's what the people want. They've elected a cop. They've elected a cop more times than they've not. If you're truly interested in what the people want out of the sheriff's office,
if you could kind of wrap
that's fine. That's fine. I'm just saying, if you truly are interested in serving the public and doing what the people want, look at the big picture. People want a cop. Doesn't mean he has to be a police officer, doesn't mean he has to write traffic tickets, but they want somebody with the law enforcement authority and the tools to do that job. I ask all of you to contact whoever it needs to be to kill this bill. Thank you.
Atkinson.
Be very brief, distinguished councilman. I thank you for the opportunity to speak to you today. I am here to support the sheriff in his seeking the reinstatement of the recognized U.S. constitutional authority of the Sheriff's Department. The only law enforcement elected official in the state for the people is our sheriff's office. I would ask you people to contact our state representatives and ask them to continue their support of House Bill 290. I would hope that the damage between the council and the sheriff's office is repairable. And I know most of you people personally. I feel you're good people. I would ask you to get with our sheriff's department and return our freedom of having him represent us on a local level back to the people. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Will McVeigh. Will McVeigh.
Thank you. My name is Will McVeigh. I'm the vice chair for the Libertarian Party of Delaware. I just have a couple of points. The first one would be to the lady earlier who was mentioning the liability issues with a lot of the local law enforcement agencies around the country, the other sheriff's offices that have had to deal with these issues. And I would just say that there's a very distinct possibility that she's comparing unlike things, because the law enforcement agencies in those jurisdictions have primary authority for law enforcement, so they will, by virtue of that fact, be exposed to more liability issues than the sheriff in this instance would, where he's going to be involved in a lot less actual law enforcement but will only have the ability to do so. I would also point out that a great deal has been made of the constitutional issues surrounding this issue, and obviously that's important, but if, as long as we're focused on the constitutional issues and not the question of whether or not law enforcement should be accountable to the local government rather than the statewide government, our state legislators can just as easily change the Constitution. Not quite as easily, but almost as easily change the Constitution. And the last thing I wanted to say is something that I was asked to read from the Republican Sussex County Council, the Republican Sussex Committee. I'm not really all that familiar with the Republican Party, but just a brief excerpt from an email about some of the political ramifications here. Now, obviously, as a libertarian, I have a little bit of a vested interest in the downfall of the Republican Party. But nevertheless, this is the excerpt. I have conducted a poll of nearly 1,000 members of Sussex County Republicans. Close to 85% of the responses make it clear beyond doubt that they are against this bill. Extreme displeasure has been expressed concerning this bill and its provisions. Your continued support of this legislation will have a severe negative impact on fielding volunteers and hugely jeopardize soliciting donations to support party activities. Passage of Bill 290 will eviscerate the party and weaken it as a political entity in Sussex County. The bill will continue to shred the voters' rights and weaken the constitutional authority of the sheriff, who is elected by the voters of Sussex County. An ignored and scorned rank-and-file electorate is not a good idea going into the 2012 elections. As I said, obviously, I'm the vice chair for the Libertarian Party of Delaware, so whatever you would like to do to sabotage the Sussex County Republicans, I welcome. Yeah. Thank you.
Entertain a motion to go into executive session for pending potential litigation and land acquisition.
So moved.
Second.
Motion, Mr. Cole. Second, Mr. Phillips. Any questions on the motion? Take the vote. Mrs. Deaver?
Yes.
Mr. Cole?
Yes.
Phillips?
Yes.
Wilson?
Yes.
Oh, yes. Motion carried. Go into executive session.